The Cambridgeshire Football Show on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Cambridgeshire Football Show, your midweek special and your weekly football fix. Cambridge United lost once again on Saturday to MK Dons. The U's have now gone 7 league games without a win. We'll be talking to Tim Armitage about that. Who's to blame and how to improve fan engagement? Histon are through to round two of the FA Vars after defeating Colney Heath last night in a replay. Defender Max York joins me on the phone to discuss their continued good form. Cambridge 105 futsal reporter Chris Horton joined me in the studio on Saturday. We'll be in his interview on all things futsal. And also I'll be providing you with your Cambridgeshire County League update as usual too. So welcome to the Cambridgeshire Football Show on a Wednesday evening. Let's start with Cambridge United. So Cambridge United have not won a league match for 7 games and sit second bottom of League 2. The club are also trying to strengthen their engagement with fans. We'll be talking to Tim Armitage about it all in just a bit. If you want to give your views on the club situation, you can tweet us at 105sport on Twitter as well. But first, let's hear what Jordan had to say after his side lost to MK Dons 1-0 on Saturday.
Another day goes by where we should have got something from the game. Good response in the second half, I felt, after what was a bit of a lacklustre first half against a really good side, by the way. You know, really good players, big team, tactically good, organised. But I thought second half, a really good performance, and, unfortunately, we've come away from nothing. It's hard to continue to stand in front of you guys to kind of, some stage they're going to have, they need to go in. Look, offensively, we did well in the second half. They had to change their system again to deal with us, make the substitutions to deal with us, and we've pushed another team. The message to the players is, when you're down the bottom like this, and when you're involved in it, and I've been involved in teams that have been down the bottom sometimes, and one or two other players have. Performances don't warrant that. When you're down there, sometimes it's like really dire performances. Tough, changing room not correct. All those things are not characteristics of us at the moment. We're a good group who train hard, who work hard, who work hard for each other, who create chances, who go out every day to win, try and win a match. And unfortunately today is another example of another hard luck story. Now, it's got to stop. It's got to stop. And I believe if they keep believing in it, it will.
So, Joe Dunn, trying to be optimistic there after another loss for United. I'm delighted to say Tim Armitage of the From the Terraces team joins me now. Thanks for joining me, Tim.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Another loss. Before we turn our attentions to off-field issues, the match itself on Saturday was a similar story for the U's. Created some chances, but again, weren't ruthless.
Yeah, it's same old, really. I mean, it was a good performance. We played very well. If there was ever a game that we deserved to get something from, then that was probably it. My objection to that comment is that after a while, you kind of don't deserve to win if you don't score goals. If you're unlucky once, fine, fair enough. But considering we do it all the time, I think it was 24 shots on goal, 24 shots, one of which was on target. You can't dominate a game so often and so much, not score, and then claim that you deserved more out of the game. Unfortunately, if you don't score, you deserve nothing.
And it was clear Joe tried to play slightly differently attacking-wise with Amu and Aziz up top. United were trying to be a bit more direct, I think, than usual, so less of probably the pretty build-up, but still the same chance created and no goals scored. So do you think Joe will probably stick with that same approach going forward despite not hitting the back of the net again?
Well, he's not got a massive choice, has he, really? Unfortunately, we don't have the personnel at the moment to necessarily play how he'd want to play, so he's got to fit in how he can. It's less of a concern as to whether he'll play the same or revert back to where he was, because we've not proved that anyway that he's doing it is working at the moment.
And also talking defensively, we'll hear from Joe now, really, just because he spoke about the goal they conceded on Saturday. Wasn't happy at all with how it went in. This is what he had to say when speaking after the game.
I just felt, you know, the manner of the goal was just awful, just awful. You know, that, somehow we've ended up away from what we work on, and that's just down to individuals, like, doing their jobs properly. And we have a certain way of defending at that moment, and we left it 1v1 at the back. And unfortunately, Chucks has obviously got a little bit more strength, and but that Brad has to learn from that, you know, when to shuffle people out into the side. So, soft goal from our point of view.
So, Tim, I still believe Joe needs to change his defence approach because, once again, United conceded on the counter-attack from a wide area, and that keeps happening every week in, week out. The Ewes get called out on the counter-attack, but still Joe is not changing his team defensively.
Yeah, I mean, I think, unfortunately, there are two kinds of goals we're conceding. There are goals that we absolutely, definitely shouldn't be conceding because we're making a mistake. And I don't know. I don't think whatever you're playing at the back and however you're playing, I'm not sure that will change that. And we've seen plenty of them. The number of, you know, very, very poor pieces of defending. You know, you could be having a great game elsewhere, but you know, nothing's going to change those. And as you say, it happens way too often. You know, that Brad Halliday should end up defending against, you know, the tallest, the largest player on the pitch. that's the error. It's, you know, the fact that he got skinned while he was doing it was kind of inevitable, really. So, you know, I think, Joe said this over and over again, just do your job, just do your job. That's what he wants. And you could have any system you want, you could have any players conceding goals like that. And you know, it's not really, it's not down to how they're, what system they're playing, or how, you know, how they're doing. It's just a mistake, and we're just too good at it. And you can't give any team that. You can't give decent teams that kind of opportunity, because they'll just punish you for it every time.
And I hate to say this, but I guess it begs the question now, when you look seven games without a win, are we talking about a manager who hasn't got long left in his job, or you hate to talk about it when, you know, last season especially, when Joe did such a brilliant job in lifting the team, but I guess we have to talk about it now. Do you think a change is imminent if the wins don't come?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, but he's not going to get forever to turn it round. The difficulty I've got with it is that, you know, unfortunately, I think that the board are as responsible for what's going on as Joe is, and you've got the people who are jointly responsible making a decision about what to do. So what I think, you know, it's almost impossible for them to, you know, to get it right, almost. You know, Joe's the nicest bloke, and you know, I've got a lot of time for him, and I think, you know, what he did at the end of the season shows that he can manage the team. I think he's got into a bit of a rut. I think he's struggling to figure out a way out of it. Do we need to sack him? Well, part of me says no, but you can't argue with the fact that we're simply just, you know, we're not performing in the way that we know the team can, and he's not performing in the way that we know he can. So, you know, it's difficult. I mean, it's going to happen at some point if he doesn't turn things round.
And Joe's been talking also last week. He spoke about how he needs to continue to give that belief to his players after the MK Dons game, after another loss. Here's what he said to Doug Shulman.
Yeah, will do, because that's what happens if you start to lose belief in your ability. Then it gets harder. The key thing we can cling on to at the moment is we're having good performances with players who are training hard and working hard and giving their all. When that stops, you're in trouble. So at the moment, I don't feel we're close to that. The players want to get themselves out of it. They're desperately disappointed. I mean, as fans, you know, you're disappointed. The frustration sometimes leads to anger. We can't, you know, we try and keep calm in and around what we're doing, and just say, look, keep going. That can only be the message that I can give. And with all these performances that we're putting in, something's got to change. And
So Joe, hoping things will change there. And Tim, I'd love to talk all day about the on-field situation, but in terms of matters off the field now, Joe isn't responsible to a degree Joe isn't responsible for things off the field, but he isn't responsible then to a degree for things on the pitch, like you just said about the board. If we ruled Dunn out, who would you say is most culpable for the current situation at Cambridge?
I just think it's a bad situation that's been allowed to develop. We've had Graeme Daniels talk about how we've got a competitive playing budget, and yet apparently that means that we can't buy players unless we're really in trouble like we are now, where all of a sudden we can find some money to buy players. And you think, well, if we can find it now, from a financial perspective, what's changed between the start of the season and now? It's not like we're suddenly getting, 15,000 people through the turnstiles and there's loads of extra money and we've had cup success and, we've got money. Nothing like that's happened. We've just suddenly found some money. And you can think, well, why couldn't we have found that at the start of the season when we went in knowing that we weren't strong enough in depth and any injuries were going to expose us? And sure enough, we get some injuries, which, if that's your tactic, get through the season without injuries, then you're going to be sadly disappointed no matter who you are. So I think, there is a huge part of this that is down to the strategy that was chosen by the club, by the club as a whole, by the board and all of the people that work outside of, above the footballing piece, that, we've got it wrong. Joe takes the blame for what's happening on the pitch in terms, the things that he can control. But those that are out of his control, it's just, he's just been stuck with what he's got. I don't think he's necessarily made the best of it, but, that's the way it is.
And I was doing some digging around some research there, and I read a quote actually in the Cambridge News from 2017. It said, Paul Barry believes Cambridge United's stable financial position means it's the right time to convert his loans into shares and make the club debt-free. I guess a year and a bit later, was probably more polar opposite. But does that show a massive breakdown in communication that Paul Barry believed in 2017 that the club was in a financial stable financial position, and now a year and a bit later, we're a massive £600,000 debt or whatever it is?
Yeah, and this is, Paul Barry's supposed to be an astute businessman. It doesn't look like he was too astute, or it doesn't look like he had all the information. And I think it was shown last in the summer when we had all the issues around the shareholder meeting that the problem you've got is that everybody seems shocked, including them, that apparently we were on to break even or make a bit of money, and all of a sudden we're in desperate financial situations. And the illusion is that it's not getting any better at the moment. So, something's gone horribly wrong, and it's never really been addressed. It came up under. We were told there was going to be an audit, which is going on. But, what will that prove? It's not necessarily the kind of audit that people were looking for. It's more about just checking the figures, as far as I can make out. So I'm not sure that it's going to, it's necessarily going to help people when those results come out. But, yeah, there's something very wrong, unfortunately.
And moving on to the meeting that was held at the club last night in terms of fan engagement, obviously we can't disclose what was discussed in the meeting, but Tim, what were your views going into the meeting of the current level of fan engagement and how can it be improved?
It can be improved massively because it's virtually non-existent. I mean, I think what happened at the shareholder meetings proves, where we're at, that there was a lot of answers expected. There was a lot of talk about what was going to happen, and yet nothing has happened, or at least nothing's been communicated has happened. So, we're no closer to an answer on the audit. We're no closer to an answer on the stadium. We've got people whose roles aren't necessarily clear within the club. So none of those things are getting through to fans, and that's what's driving the frustration. That's what's, encouraging the behaviour, encouraging rumours that then, once they start, it's very difficult to kind of rein them in.
And I guess one of the things that potentially, as fans, you want answers straight away, and I guess it's not always going to come straight away from the club's perspective, but when Dave and Jez left in around February time or December, and then February time, I guess that created a void where natural speakers of the club who'd been coming out and talking to the press every few months, etc., had now gone. And Graham Daniels came out a bit last year when matters on the pitch needed cooling up in terms of Derry leaving and Dunn taking charge. But I guess that has to continue off the field as in off the field matters as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. Fans perhaps expect, you know, whether we like it or not as fans, football is a business. And, you know, if you want to be able to afford players on the pitch, then you've got to make money off the pitch. And unfortunately, that's a big problem for us because we didn't and we haven't. But the sponsorship and all of the corporate stuff that gets done has to be done. There's a difficult balancing act so that it doesn't impinge on kind of the fans and the fans don't get upset about it. But it's part and parcel of the game now, unfortunately. We just don't seem to be executing very well. And I think you said that we want answers instantly. And, you know, perhaps we're a bit unforgiving in that respect, that some things take time, no matter how keen somebody is to do something about it. The difficulty is that if we don't talk about these things afterwards, then it doesn't look like people are keen to do something about it. There's the kind of feeling that things are still being covered up because they're not talking about it. Now, if it's being done, then it makes no sense at all not to talk about it because, you know, you're going to be accused of ducking the issue if you're doing something about it, even if it's taking forever to do or if it's taking the right amount of time to do, if that's a long time, then you've got to keep people up to date with what's going on.
Well, hopefully, in terms of matters on the field, they can improve this weekend when the Ewes travel to Lincoln. In terms of matters off the field, we'll have to see how that unfolds. But thanks for joining me, Tim. And we'll hear more from you and From the Terraces on Sunday.
Cheers.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Starve myself. I thought that love was a kind of emptiness, and at least I understood then the hunger I felt, and I didn't have to call it loneliness. We all have a hunger. Don't let him get you down, you're the best thing I've ever seen.
Hunger by Florence and the Machine. It'll be interesting to see whether the U's players have that when they travel to Lincoln on Saturday. But moving to futsal now, and the Saturday just gone, I spoke to Cambridge 105 Radio's futsal reporter Chris Horton. Chris is a futsal super fan and follows Cambridge United futsal team up and down the country. He joined me on the Cambridgeshire Football Show, the Saturday show, to discuss and talk about the game, Cambridge United's form and how to get involved in the sport. Firstly, Chris, for anyone that doesn't know by now, obviously we've been doing futsal for a while now, just tell us, what is futsal, the rules, everything?
Right, well, Ollie, nice to meet you, and nice to be talking to the viewers about futsal. Tim's a very difficult act to follow, I must say. The voice of reason, I was listening to that. Well, futsal, basically it was invented in the 1930s in Uruguay by a chap who worked for the YMCA. And he was looking, because of the weather over there, he was looking for a sport that he could play indoors. And so he combined basketball, handball, the rules of water polo and football to come up with the sport of futsal. Right. And basically, it's been played since the 30s, predominantly in South American countries and then in Spain, Italy and around the Mediterranean. In 1989, FIFA realised that it was a very popular sport and there, presumably there could be some money in it. So they adopted the sport as their only approved version of five-a-side football. So the version that we play over here is not a version that is recognised by FIFA. And so that was in 1989. Basically, in this country, in sort of around about 2003, the FA came on board and started promoting futsal with a national league, which has been going since then, and has only about 3 weeks ago released a six-year strategy for the advancement and development of futsal in this country, which is great news.
Yeah, that moves me on to my next question. Just explain the pyramid, if you like, of futsal across the country and also that's set up around the UK, and then what level did Cambridge United fit in that?
Right, well, the pyramid at the very top level is the it's all amateur. It's the national... it's all under the umbrella term, the National Futsal League, sponsored by the FA, so it's called the FA National Futsal League. And the top tier is the Super League, so that's the Premier Division. And Cambridge United, I'm pleased to say, are in the Premier Division.
There you go.
And actually, last season, in the inaugural season of this Super League, they came third. An amazing achievement. It's a 12-team Super League. Below that, you have... it's more geographic. So you have Division 1, which is North, and Division 1 South. And then below that, you have Division 2, which is, again, is more geographically arranged. So you have a North West, a Midlands... a south east, that type of thing. And I think it's similar, not as many leagues, but there's a women's league as well. And so that's how it's set up.
So when did then Cambridge United first decide to form a team, and how has it grown over the past few years? I mean, we followed them very closely last year when you, like you say, and they got for third in the Super League. But firstly, when did they first start to form a futsal team, and how's the growth sort of how's it continued over the past few years?
Right. Well, in 2013, two local chaps, Jose Lima and Rogerio. I don't know his surname. Sorry, I can't remember it. They formed Cambridge Futsal Club. And basically, they played a local level, a sort of social league. And I contacted them and with regards to setting up a youth section of the team. And we had various meetings and we talked about how to progress the team to join the FA National League. And obviously, you need backing for that. So I think they arranged a meeting with Jez George, who was Cambridge United at the time. Jez was a big fan of futsal, big supporter of futsal, could see the benefits for football and also appreciate the fact that it's a sport in its own right, which is really important to say, because it isn't five-a-side football. It's his own sport. And from that, basically Cambridge Futsal Club, although it still continues to this day as a social event, which is what I run, Cambridge Futsal Club morphed into Cambridge United FC Futsal. And they went to Wembley with Jez, did a presentation to the FA and got accepted into the National Futsal League as Cambridge United FC Futsal. And from there, won their division. They had Cambridge United legend Luke Chadwick playing for them.
Of course, yeah.
And they won their division, and then the next season got to the semi-final of the FA Cup, and the FA Futsal Cup, that is, which was played at the Velodrome at Manchester. If anybody's not been there, I'd highly recommend it. It's an absolutely fantastic stadium. And then played prior to an England international that was held at Norwich. Cambridge played York in a playoff to get into the Super League, and fortunately they won. I don't like to remind Luke that he got sent off in that match, so, but I'd just like to say that to the listeners that, you know, it wasn't all about Luke Chadwick playing futsal. Yeah, so they won that. Dave Doggett was chairman at the time. He came along. It was in front of 300-400 people. Fantastic achievement. So, yeah, in the Super League last season, was just hoping not to get relegated. And as I said, an amazing achievement.
Yeah, it was an amazing achievement. Third, like you say, in the league. A comfortable third as well, I must add. There were 19 points a second, but then 4 points off fourth as well. So what a year for the club it was. The coach, Louis Mendonça, what is he like? What does he bring to the futsal team? And how does that role differ from your usual football team manager?
Well, Louis's got experience himself at playing high-level futsal. I don't exactly know all his CV. But he brings that knowledge to his training sessions. They're training twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then match situations on Sundays. And he brings that knowledge. He prepares the team well as he possibly can, and hence I think he needs great credit goes to him for the overachievement of last year.
And is his role as head coach more of a to develop players' skills on the training court, if you like, or is it more of a man management motivating the players? What is it like, and how does it differ from futsal to football, your usual football head coach?
I would say it's a very tactical, technical game compared to football. For those who've never seen it, and I'd obviously encourage everybody to come along to the University of Cambridge Sports Centre, which is a magnificent venue that we have in the city, and come and watch one of our futsal Super League matches, which is not just a game, it's a whole entertainment, a couple of hours for family. And unfortunately, because of all our kind sponsors, it's free this season. You'll see that it's a very technical, tactical game, more akin to basketball than actual football, really, except it's played with your feet. And you score goals rather than, put a ball for a hoop.
So talk about this season then. Cambridge United haven't had the greatest start to the season. Sit bottom of the league, a couple of losses. Oxford City Lions and Reading as well, who won the division last season. So not going great this year. But what was the ambition at the start of the year, and where are they looking to kick on from now?
Well, I think the ambition was, again, to just remain a Super League team. It's very important we stay in the league. We lost three of our key players, unfortunately, during the summer months. Alberto went on a world tour with his wife. One of the other players, Vitali, one of the key players, he returned to one of his Eastern European countries. And rising star Monty Boutel, who's now, I'm pleased to say, England under-23 player, has gone to Loughborough University on a futsal scholarship. So he's actually, unfortunately, joined one of the rivals in the Super League. Very difficult players to replace when you're talking about, three key starting, five-man team, that they were three of the key players.
Yeah, and I'd say that's some we lost players, but I guess, is there a long-term goal? And obviously you say to stay in the Super League, but how can not just Cambridge United, but how can the game continue to grow as it has been doing over the past few years?
Well, as I said, the FA have at last released a strategy written by Mike Scabala, who's the England head coach. It's a six-year strategy to grow the game. All local FAs have been given KPIs to make sure that players, footballers, young footballers are playing futsal, because it's part of the England DNA at last, that we've acknowledged that it creates better ballers. Basically, if the younger you play futsal, this is what's happening and has happened in many other countries for many, many years now. They've been playing futsal until they were 14. And at 14, they decide whether to play football or whether to carry on playing futsal because they have professional futsal leagues in their countries. Mm-hmm. If you watch any of the Spanish teams, any of the great players...
I was about to mention them, of course, yeah, Spain.
They will all tell you, you'll all see their quotes, they've all played futsal. It's such an enjoyable sport to play.
Yeah, you, reminiscent of the Barcelona days and the tiki-taka style, you can imagine how that developed straight from futsal onto the football grass. Chris, for anyone who wants to get involved, anyone who's just learning about the game today and is, you know, inspired and wants to play this sport, perhaps was never had a career in football because of their size, perhaps, or maybe they're more suited to futsal, how can they get involved? Where can they start playing? And like I say, who's it good for?
Right. Well, for any parents out there with young children, I would highly recommend you email futsal@cambridgeunited.co.uk. You will get a reply and a direction as to where futsal is available for your young person, and that's male and female. There's futsal clubs all up and down the country, some 20, 30 miles away from here if it can't be accommodated in Cambridge. Where there's a will, there's a way. If you're an adult, then I would encourage you to, if you want to play socially, and this is from 18 to 60, I'm 55, I play it just for social fun. Then look on Facebook, Cambridge Futsal Club. I run a Thursday night session at Trumpeton Sports Centre, 8 till 9. I need a minimum of 15. And basically, I've got 26 already signed up in 4 weeks.
Blimey.
And everybody who's been has thoroughly enjoyed it. Mm. And if you want to, you know, the more people who start playing it, the more pressure there is for leagues to be arranged. If I had, say, 35 players, then we could have enough teams to form a league. Mm. There have been leagues Brilliant. In the past. They come and go. But it's really, you know, I think futsal has reached a peak now, as in this is, it's not going back in the box. Mm. It's out there. More people know about it. And this is the start of what I call a revolution.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Chris. It's great to hear you talk so passionately about the sport you love. It's great to hear more information about futsal. And, of course, on Cambridge 105 Radio, we'll be covering Cambridge United Futsal Club throughout the season. That was Chris Horton there speaking on the Cambridgeshire Football Show on Saturday about all things futsal. So massive thanks to him for coming in and talking about the sport he loves so much. Coming up on the Cambridgeshire Football Show midweek slot, we'll be talking to Histon defender Max York about their brilliant form, and I'll be giving you your Cambridgeshire County League update as well. You're listening to the Cambridgeshire Football Show on Cambridge 105 Radio. Before we are joined by Histon skipper Max York in just a second, let's hear from Lance Key after last night's match against Colney Heath. The Stutes won 2-0 in the FA Vars Round 1 replay, and here's what manager Lance had to say.
So Lance, an assured and professional performance on a night with a fair bit of provocation.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you expect this kind of effort from those kind of teams coming from a sort of North London area. It was one of those games where, from Saturday's game, if I'm honest, they've earned that tonight, because Saturday, you know, Downton, well, nine men effectively, with Ed Rolfe carrying a knock as well, hence why he hasn't played tonight for a good 50, if not 60 minutes on Saturday. To put in a shift like that on Saturday, to earn the draw on Saturday, to bring him back here tonight. Our first 45 tonight, probably as good as I've seen us, I think. The way we moved it, our tempo, a purpose about everything we did. 2-0 in the first half, could have been 3 or 4 personally. And then second half, it comes around where they're down to 9 men after a while, and it's, they put men behind the ball but then try and catch them on a break when they've got it. And we didn't reach the same height second half as we did the first, but the first half, if we can repeat that week in, week out, we'll be hard to beat.
Yeah, I mean, some really good flowing passing football. An early goal settled you down completely, and really you dominated the first half, and they made their life a lot more difficult conceding a second goal, and then, as you say, getting someone sent off in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, we always say about discipline, and when a team has lost a player like they have, and they've lost their discipline, the last thing we want to do, if you recall the first minute of the second half, mm-hmm. we take the centre kick, Evan gets booked for a so-called elbow, and that's what they were looking for. They were trying to even it up, and so you can't get caught into that. And you know, the way we played the first half, the way we moved the ball, our wing backs were superb tonight. They got forward. I mean, young Andy, who's just come back in, he looked a real threat all night, you know, and Macca on the other side. And a midfield three moved the ball well with purpose. We had Evan going in behind, Greenway going in behind, you know, lead holding the ball up well. It was just the front two were lively, their runs, you know, you defended well. Everything we did first half was just spot on. If you, the coaching manual of how you play most of the time, it was just was perfect in the first half, and sometimes it's hard to replicate that second half.
So that was Lance Key there speaking last night to from the Terriers' Tim Armitage about Histon's 2-0 win over Coney Heath in the FA Vars Round 1 replay. They're of course through to Round 2. They'll take on Woodbridge Town on the 3rd of November. But joining me now on the phone is skipper Max York. So thank you for joining me, Max.
Hi, mate. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, like I say, first let's talk last night and Saturday up against Coney Heath, who were... And you were looking likely for back-to-back 1-0 wins in the Cup on Saturday, but a last-minute equaliser squashed that, and it ended up going 1-0 extra time and then a replay last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the last thing you want in the season when you're trying to push on in the league as much as you are trying to do as well as you can in the FA Vars. But I suppose, you know, this is the nature of the beast, really, in football. We held on. We had tough conditions to deal with on Saturday, especially with the wind and the pitch. But, you know, we got our rewards. We played unbelievably last night and got the result that we wanted in the end.
And a strange one on Saturday, not to decide the match on penalties after going the distance in extra time.
Yeah, I know. I don't think I've ever heard of anything similar to that before. But I suppose it's the rules of the FA Vars. Not used to it myself, and I don't think anyone really knew if it was right or wrong. But at least it's been decided now. I didn't have to go the full way to the extra time or penalties last night, and we just did it in the 90.
So how difficult then was it for, like you say, the boys to get up and go again after so nearly claiming a win on Saturday, and then having to deliver another 90 last night, especially when effectively you've got bigger fish to fry at the minute in the league?
Yeah, I just think it's part of what we have to do as semi-professional footballers. We have to adapt to the fact that we're going to play Saturday, Tuesday, for how many weeks and months of the season. You're going to have to battle with the environment. You're going to have to battle with whatever you get thrown in front of you, really. And it's difficult, particularly after going 90 minutes, and it takes a lot out of you with the extra time on top of that. But We're a good squad of players, and I think we can adapt to whatever's thrown at us.
And Lance labelled last night's display as one of the best he's seen. Would you go along with that as well?
Oh yeah, definitely. It was a pleasure to be part of on the pitch when everyone's sort of playing for each other. We're a squad that, you know, we're like a big group of mates, and I think that has a massive impact when we play on the pitch, because we play for each other and we play for the staff and the fans.
And how are the players viewing the FA Vars at the minute? Because you exited the FA Cup in the manner you did, losing 7-0 in the replay, which is gutting, against King's Lynn. So does now the FA Vars become a competition that's even more important to the club?
Yeah, I think, I mean, any competition that we are involved in, we want to try and do the best we can. And obviously we had a bit of disappointment where it was such fine margins in the actual FA Cup. But yeah, the FA Vars is something that we believe we can go far in. We've seen a few local teams over the years do well in it, and there's no reason why we can't go on and really push through the rounds.
Let's talk now about the season as a whole then. When you first came on the show, right at the start of the season, after the first game, in fact, you said how important it was for you and Rob were on the show, Rob Ruddy, and you said it was important to get your first clean sheet. You've since gone on to get 6, which is already half as many as you achieved last campaign.
We love a clean sheet, and as a defender, it's like scoring a goal. So being able to keep clean sheets, there's been a few games where I think we could have kept more clean sheets, but it's one of those things where as long as we're scoring more than we're conceding, or if we're playing well and we're digging out results, then, you know, I'm still going to make me happy.
And one of the things that strikes me about this season, Savan Max, is how much more ruthless the side and focused the side has been, and everyone in the dressing room seems to be. You lost 2-1 to Long Melford a few weeks ago, and the next three games after that went 2-0, 3-2, 5-0, which shows just how clinical you are this season.
Yeah, definitely. It's season by season, I think you grow as a squad of players and as a team. As I spoke about last time I was on the show, before we played God Manchester away, we won that game. And I think even though we were doing well from there, I think that really gave us a stepping stool to realise what we could achieve. Doing, you know, fairly well in the FA Cup, going on to do what we've done with a slight blips. You know, we lost in the FA Cup on that replay night. We then lost again on the Saturday. And then from there, we've dug in some good results. We're unbeaten since Long Melford, winning 5, drawing 2. I just think we're a different side this year, where it's that mental edge as much as it is the physical.
And after those three games where you won convincingly on the bounce, then came the Stowmarket game, which you drew 1-1. That point, I imagine, must have been crucial, as you're now 2 points clear of Stowmarket with 2 games in hand. So that must have been a big point, especially away from home, when you returned to the dressing room off the pitch.
Yeah, definitely. It's nice to be able to go to these places where, you know, that's a big team in our league this year, and they'll be competing as much as what we will. So to be able to go away from home to keep the points coming, we would have liked to have got 3, and anyone can say it, but I think we were unlucky not to. But still, to be able to take a point, and then, like you said, to be able to play at home and to keep bringing in 3 points, that's great for us this year.
And it's October, but you get the feeling this Friday's clash coming up against God Manchester is pretty crucial. Local derby, they're the only team that can overtake you with the games they have in hand too. So I know it's October, but this could be a game that you look back at the end of the season and say, wow, that was crucial.
Yeah. It's still early. I think we're maybe 9 or 10 league games in. We've probably still got 30 games to go, but it's always a crucial game. I think whoever you play is a crucial game, because we, for example, on the Tuesday night when we played Walsham a few weeks back, we went 2-0 up, we then went to 2-2, and then we nicked a winner to win 3-2. And I think it's results like that where last year we could have either lost it or just taken a point, whereas this year we gained the 2 points. And even with this Friday coming up, any local rival game is going to be big, let alone when it's a team and ourselves who are both doing well.
And I've asked this question to Lance and Rob Ruddy before when they spoke on the show, and I'll ask you the same. Now you're winning so frequently, the next question mark that will be thrown your way is complacency. How do you, as skipper of the Saints, well, ensure that it doesn't spread across the dressing room?
I think that comes as the result comes, really. I mean, if there is a result that doesn't go our way, you have to stay positive. It's a long season. Doesn't matter what level of football you play at. The great thing with football is there's another game where you can rectify yourself within a few days. Complacency hopefully doesn't creep in. We're only human at the same time. We may have off games, but this year I do think even on our off games, we're still there to gain a valid point or to compete.
Yeah, and then just finally, Max, it's been brilliant speaking to you. Just some team news then ahead of this weekend. Lance mentioned to Tim in his interview that Ed Rolfe had a bit of a knock. Does that underline, well, firstly, he's okay, and will he be available for Friday? But does that underline that you may have to think about rotating in these cup competitions, especially when your main priority is the league?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously down to staff and Keezy and what they think suits. And I do think this year we've got the players to rotate. Injuries are injuries. They're tough to take, really, because particularly when someone who's our top goal scorer could potentially be out for it, it has a little bit of an effect. But to be honest, we've got some good players in the squad, and we showed last night with Zoops going up top, played really well, scored a goal. And as Keezy said in the interview, like our rotation of play, the way we play from wing-backs, midfield, strikers as a back three, we've got some good players in the squad who can rotate into positions and can still deliver.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for talking to us, Max, and we really appreciate the interview. And best of luck for Friday as well.
Brilliant. Thank you, Ollie. Take care, mate. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye. That was Max Shaw, the skipper of Histon, talking all things the Stutes and their tremendous form. Let's quickly give you your Cambridgeshire County League update now. And in the Kershaw Prem, Foulburn Institute cruised to a 2-0 win over Eton Soak, and they remain top. And bottom of the league, St Neots, remain bottom. They're not moving from the foot of the table. They lost 4-0 to Brampton on the weekend. They also wins cup wins for Cambridge University Press, Ely City Reserves and Linton Granter. In Senior A, they had a break from the league, but the top two met in the William Cody Intermediate Cup. It was second in the league, Milton, who came out on top against a strong Overside 2-1. And in Senior B, there were a few sides that were in league action as AFC Barley Mow capitalised on Blunsham's slip-up at second bottom Lakenheath. They drew 3-3. AFC Barley Mow extended their lead at the top to 4 points after a 2-0 win over Steel Bumpstead first team. And the only other league fixture, St Ives, had gone to third after just edging out bottom club Royston Town A in a thriller 4-3. That's pretty much all we've got time for on the Cambridgeshire Football Show. I'll be back on Saturday for all things previewing the football. Up next is the new music generator with Tim.
It's not the waking, it's the rising. It is the grounding of a foot uncompromising. It's not forgoing of the light. It's not the opening of eyes. It's not the waking, it's the rising. It's not the shade, we should be past it. It's the light and it's the obstacle that casts it. It's the heat that drives the light. It's the fire it ignites. It's not the waking, it's the rising. It's not the song, it is the singing.
Digital and on FM.
This is Cambridge 105 Radio.